Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Stacey Hunke, author of Yes You Can, Everything You Need from A to Z to Influence Others to Take Action, Part 2 of 2. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Stacey Hunke, author of Yes You Can, Everything You Need from A to Z to Influence Others to Take Action, Part 2 of 2. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Stacey Hunke, president of First Impressions Consulting, shares with us her insights on the internal and external communications factors that help us positively influence those around us to take the actions we desire. And so, without any further delays, let's get started. Now, Stacey, I wanted to shift our conversation a little bit. As I mentioned up in the first part of the podcast, I'd like to spend a little time talking about meetings. And I think it's probably fair to say that most of us spend an inordinate amount of time in meetings. So I think if we can help our listeners to improve in this area, not only will it help them personally, but it'll have a profound impact on their organization as well. In Yes You Can, you talk a lot about meetings. You have a lot of different skills and practices to help meetings. To start out with, I wanted to ask for your insights as to what the general purpose of a meeting should be. Why should we have a meeting instead of using some other mass or group communication mechanism like a newsletter or a mass email?
You're hitting on 2 points here, Nathan. I think first you should always ask yourself that exact question before you have the meeting and before you schedule it, because otherwise we meet to meet to figure out why we met, and we're always back on the same subject. I think it really does come down to the topic at hand and how critical that topic is. If it's a topic that is going to require several different insights from different areas within your team or their different experiences that they are experiencing, there's more of a purpose of a meeting. I think it's more of a brainstorming session sometimes, or if you've reached a point of a conversation that you've been having where there has to be a decision needs to be made. I think there's more of a concern with once you have and you're there with that meeting, there's more of a concern of what goes into the meeting before, during, and after that truly determines, was this a waste of time?
Yeah, because so often I think I sit back and ask myself, why did we have a meeting if it's just somebody up there at the head of the table or up on a stage just throwing out some information or maybe what I call a little pontificating and philosophizing, and there's no interaction. Then it was like, well, I could have read that in about half the time.
You're hitting on a really important point. If you want more success out of your meetings, commit to having everyone has to come to the table, whether it's with an idea, an agenda item. That's what we do with our team meetings. The leader, the facilitator role always gets rotated. Because I don't want to be the one that carries the load. And these meetings are not for me. Everyone, if we're part of a team, everyone has to commit to it. So each month, someone always rotates that leadership facilitator role. And it's the facilitator's role to make sure that everyone submits an agenda item that is shared with us at least 24 hours before. And then once we're at that meeting, everyone has to come to the table with something that is going to positively impact the group or something that they need to discuss with us, but it cannot be the same item month after month.
Okay.
And we've got a pretty tight time frame on our meetings, too. You know, there's that piece of no more than 50 minutes today, no more than 30 minutes today. And suddenly, people start respecting that, as well as when you've got everyone participating in the meeting, people, it's no more put your heels up and your legs up on the table. Now you're committed and you're holding yourself. You're going to hold your team accountable.
Okay. Well, certainly.
You know, and the other piece about putting a time cap on our meetings, it forces everyone to get to the point. You made a comment, you get to a meeting and someone's just up there as a philosopher, just theorizing behind their points and their ideas and concepts. But part of why meetings go on forever, a lot of individuals that I work with take forever to get to the point.
Yes. Yeah, they just kind of ramble on for a while.
They do. And there's qualifying, over-qualifying phrases that I share with individuals that cause you to ramble. They're phrases like, what I meant to say. Or, I may be way off base here. This may be a stupid idea. There's all these extra phrases that we'll begin our sentences with. And if you're ever in a meeting and you're wondering two things. You're wondering, why do you always get interrupted? Or, why you'll have a great idea, no one acknowledges it until someone else steals it from you 2 minutes later. I would bet there's a good chance you're taking way too long to get to the point. And as a result, you frustrate your listeners, so those two, one or the two, or both, of those situations will start to occur.
Oh, that's great. That is great. Now, Stacy, you mentioned that everyone had to submit their agenda items 24 hours in advance. And I know, and yes, you can. You say an agenda should go out 24 hours in advance. How far in advance should you actually schedule the meeting?
Gosh, you know, that's one of those questions because of the world that we now live where time is of essence. It just so happens with my team, and I don't, you know, it's something for our listeners to try. I'm not guaranteeing that it works for everyone. We, at the end of our meeting, so we schedule it once a month as a team. At that end of the meeting, that's when we schedule our next month's meeting. Now, we choose to do that because our calendars, we travel a lot. Our calendars are pretty crazy that we definitely dedicate it. And it's usually on a Monday morning because that just happens to be most of our office time.
Oh, okay.
You know, so sometimes it's just a matter of what day tends to work well for everyone. And it's almost, it's just expected then month to month. If you schedule too far in advance, people forget about it. If you wait a week before... Of course, those type of things are going to come up. Those meetings are going to pop up.
But
something that's on a more regular basis, it's easier to communicate to your team, this is just something that is expected once a month.
Now, you also talked about thinking about in advance, should I even have a meeting? In the book, you mentioned about being very selective about who to have at the meeting. And I've got to admit, I have sat in many meetings where, you know, there was a decision to be made, but I'd look around the room and I had a manager of a department and then that person's entire staff. And you wonder, well, why is everyone here? Because they didn't say one word amongst all of them the entire meeting. Do you have any rules of thumb that our listeners could use to help them pick and choose who should be at our meeting and who probably doesn't need to come?
Let's go back to when you talked about the three components that are listed in the beginning of the book, and one of them was audience. This is a prime example, Nathan, of look at what is the objective of the meeting, purpose of the meeting, who directly has impact on the decisions that need to be made, and only those individuals should be there.
Okay.
And I think the minute that it's, well, the manager and then that person's team, and then another department that sometimes interacts, it's just, I'll guarantee that's what causes those meetings to go longer than they ever necessarily have to. There's too many hands in the pot, my father used to always say. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure individuals would not be disappointed if on a day where typically they have 5 meetings, they finally now only have 4. I think because of the way meetings are set up, all these issues that we're bringing to the table, that is why productivity gets impacted. I've got several friends that are very high positions within large corp companies, and when I ask them about their days, they will say 8 o'clock till sometimes 6, 7 o'clock at night, meeting solid.
Yeah.
And it just at some point, ask yourself, did I really need to be there? Could I send a team member, just one person from my team, so that I can get a break from the meeting and actually do something that needs to get done, it's probably more productive.
Mm-hmm.
If your meetings right now aren't working, it's time to make a change.
Sure. And it's like doing a little introspect on yourself and your communications. We should do introspect on our meetings.
Shouldn't we?
Yeah. Oh, I think that'd improve. Just a little introspect would probably improve a lot of meetings and a lot of organizations tremendously.
One of my clients, I'll share a fun story with you, and I've heard of this before, so they might have stole it from another company. They were having problems with people not participating and the meetings going over. What they did is they got rid of all the chairs, and if that didn't work, it was 50 minutes, and 50 minutes gone. The meeting was done. And they said they never even got close to 50 minutes because suddenly participants in that meeting could not get a chance to get comfortable.
Yes.
I think meetings are kind of mini vacations throughout the day for most people.
Oh, yeah. You sit in the meeting and you doodle or you zone out or you've got your BlackBerry going on underneath the table.
Mm-hmm. As if no one can see that.
Right.
Surprise and shock to our listeners. Everyone knows what you're doing.
Yeah. We all know. Mm-hmm. And we're probably somewhat guilty of that, too.
Sure. We all are. I agree. Yeah. So, therefore, I just bring mine right on the top of the table.
Right. Yeah, we might as well just bring it out.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, now, Stacy, very much related to meetings are the presentations that go with them. And I know we've already talked a little bit about presentations. We talked about the importance of practice ahead of a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So, in addition to practicing, for those you provide coaching to who have a real fear of doing presentations, what are 2 or 3 recommendations that you give to those individuals to help them overcome their fear and deliver great presentations?
It comes down to nonverbal behavior, and people are always surprised with that because I think they want the magic wand, Ethan. And the two things is attitude. It's mind over matter. And it's focusing on the most important thing, that being your audience. I think when you take the focus off yourself, you start to relax. So that's the very first step. It's mind over matter. And you can truly convince yourself out of that presentation, or you can convince yourself in a position where you start thinking, I am just here to have a conversation with my listeners. Now, the other technique that I learned years ago, because I was one of those that was just freaked out by standing up in front of a large group, anything larger than 20, is when you have an audience in front of you, 5 or more individuals, it comes to eye connection. And I call it connection rather than contact. And the difference is with eye connection, you're standing in a group of 20-plus people. Look, connect with one person at a time for a sentence or a thought. And here's what starts to happen. Imagine you have 20 people sitting in front of you. And instead of going into that mindset, that panic mode of, I've got to talk to all 20. And all 20 of these individuals are staring at me. They're looking at me. Do they like me? Do they not like me? When you look at one person for a complete sentence or thought, suddenly you're really just having a one-on-one conversation with them.
Sure.
And I get done with that person, and I find the eyes of the next person. And literally, when I'm looking at that person for a sentence or thought, I don't see anyone else in the audience. And for me, that really helps me relax. And I've never met anyone yet that looks at an individual long enough to connect. There's a difference. Contact is more of a scanning with the eyes.
Yes.
Connection is you're engaging that individual. And as a result, you'll start minimizing side conversations, people getting stuck on their BlackBerries. You want to get to the point as a speaker, as a communicator, to be able to see the whites of your listener's eyes from the time you start till the time you conclude.
Yes.
Then, you know, you hit the sweet spot on that tennis racket.
Yeah. And this is one I have to admit, I have to work on, because I'm more of one of those scanners.
Are you?
I am. I'm guilty as charged. I will start on one side of the room and then go to the middle and then go to the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I also break some of the other rules because I'm not a podium person, but I do tend to take a few steps and walk around a little.
Mm-hmm.
So I do those things also. So
well,
that's something I got to work.
Yeah, that's the first thing, right? At least you're aware. Yeah. Most people aren't even aware. And just the fact to be aware of what you're doing with all these nonverbal cues that can really make or break our presentation. I mean, how many of us know someone comes to mind that we think, oh, every time they're going to leave the meeting, it's just you want to slit your wrist because they're so dry, they're so boring.
Right.
Or you know someone that every time you have a conversation with them face-to-face, their eyes are looking everywhere, and they're looking at the top of your head and your shoulder, and they're always looking behind you. And after a while, you get a complex. You're wondering, what are you looking at?
Right.
What are you looking at?
Well, I have another question, and this is kind of a personal one because I was trained to do something that you recommend not doing, and yes, you can. So I wanted to share this with our listeners, so I'll say I'm asking it on their behalf, but it's kind of selfish on my part. What I was always taught to do is anytime anybody asks me a question during a presentation is I needed to reaffirm them. So I needed to say something like, good question.
Mm.
And I have done this so religiously. I've actually had someone in the audience look at me because I usually don't say good question. I say great question.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I say good question, they look and say, well, why wasn't my question great? I've actually had that happen.
Really?
Yes, I've been so religious about this.
I'm going to use your story as an example with my audience.
Please do, because and the room just burst out laughing. Because I said, good question. And they said, oh, well, why is my question not great? Everybody else's was great. Mine's just good.
Of course. Well, you know, that's one reason why I recommend not using good question. That would be the first reason.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason, if you truly, the next time you catch yourself, Nathan, going there,
yes.
If you can catch yourself before that and really ask yourself, why are you using the phrase good question? And it's filler.
Okay.
You know, we tend to use phrase to think about what we want to say, how we want to answer the question. And the way I teach individuals how to handle Q&A is you start with the questioner, you stay connected with them with your eyes, and when you begin to give you the answer to their question, give a sentence or two to your questioner, and then switch your eyes and share your answer with everyone in the audience. And then when you're done with the question, you come back and you give the questioner closure by reconnecting with them. And that type of technique communicates to your audience, good question. I'm glad you asked that, without having to fill the space.
Yes. And I am so guilty of that filler.
You know, and everyone is. When I share Q&A techniques and how do you manage behaviors or difficult situations, people are always surprised at that. But it makes sense. And instead of saying good question, you want to pause during that time instead, because that pause gives you an opportunity to think of an answer. I mean, not only to think of an answer, but during Q&A, you've got to hear the question, analyze it, think of an answer, and then respond. There's a lot going on there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it gets back to me to a point of authenticity also.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a good jab for me as a wake-up call, because I just got in the habit of saying good question or great question, normally great question.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing authentic about it.
Yeah.
It's not that I really thought it was a great question. That was what I was told I had to do in a response. And so anytime I was asked anything, the first words that crossed my lips were, great question.
Mm-hmm. You're bringing up a good point. You said it became habit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think any time, and that's why this is a lifelong process, any time your behavior starts to become habit and you become very comfortable, I always tell my presenters that I work with, when you start getting comfortable on stage, that's a time that you need to reevaluate.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Stacy, before we close, there was one other thing I wanted to mention, and that is that you have a website, which is www.stacyhunke.com,
mm-hmm.
and that your website provides an abundance of additional resources on improving one's communication skills. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you might just for a moment tell us a little bit about your website and the resources that folks can find there.
Well, definitely having a good time right now, Nathan, with social media. And there's a lot they can, our listeners can follow me on Twitter, Facebook. I have a blog that operates once a week. I'm posting a new blog there. There on the website, there are lots of articles that have been published. So there's additional resources that individuals can use, not only for themselves, but feel free to share with others. And there's also a quarterly newsletter that readers can also take a look at and look at archives as well as sign up for the frequent ones that come out once a quarter.
Great. And we will provide a link to your website from the article that accompanies this podcast so our listeners can just with one click go right to your website.
Great. Well, you have been so kind and truly so enjoyable to talk to. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, thank you. I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today, and I briefly mentioned it earlier, but yeah, I really loved your book, and I want to point out that you have great exercises, great questions to really challenge folks to improve their communication skills. So yeah, I really hope our listeners will pick up a copy of your book, and we'll have links.
You.
You're welcome. And we'll have links on the website that they can just, with one click, get access to doing that as well.
Great.
So,
well, I'm
great.
Glad you enjoyed the book, so thank you for the feedback.
And thank you for joining us.
Take care, Nathan.
You too. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Stacy Hunke for being with us today and sharing her insights on improving personal communication skills. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Stacy Hunke and Yes You Can at www.stacyhunke.com. Until next time, so long.